Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
Hi, and welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. I'm delighted to bring to you Steve Kachik, who is coming to us from England. He is a gentleman who I met through my Video Rockstars mentoring program. And Steve specializes in the area of dealing with challenging situations, customer service challenges, and how that relates to you as a legal nurse consultant in dealing with attorneys who sometimes have episodes where they get very angry at the people around them, including the legal nurse consultants who are there to help them. So I thought that Steve had some valuable insights that could help us in dealing with this type of a challenging situation. Welcome, Steve, to the show. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Pat.
I know that we've been talking, and I've been talking in the last few minutes about angry attorneys and challenging situations. Could you give us some tips about how we can handle that type of a situation? How do we go about trying to defuse somebody who is just raging?
Okay, I think the first thing to recognize is that sometimes that we can aggravate the situation. And even on occasion, we could be the cause of a situation. So it's not always the other person. It's about sometimes looking in our own behaviors. But I tend to, well, I've used the workshop where I use an acronym actually, BREAD. And I put it down to, we have to look at behaviors, rapport, because rapport is essential. Empathy, how to empathize with people, to use assertiveness and to stay what I call detached. And by that, I mean not being emotionally attached to the outcome, but so stepping back from it. And by going through those, it gives us that edge. We're thinking about those steps and what we can do in each of them. So if someone is angry, the first thing, and I believe most of your people will be on the phone.
They will be.
It's really about the listening skills that go with it. You have to be listening verbally and non-verbal for all those cues, so that as soon as they pick up the phone, you should better immediately or within a few seconds assess where they are. So that's the first thing. It's that initial assessment, which is really the rapport building, you could say.
Well, can you break that down for us a little bit? What are we listening for? What are we assessing for?
Okay. Like I say, I mean, I use the acronym BREAD. So I put the B in because in many ways, behaviors come into it, first of all. The R is for rapport, building rapport. Now, to build rapport, people like people who are like themselves. So you have to find out what they're at, and you have to sort of match to some level where they're at. Now, I always say that doesn't mean matching anger, but if they're really loud, really angry, they're probably speaking faster, louder, maybe shouting, possibly swearing. What we need to do is to match the energy a bit, up our energy, so we're not completely mismatched from them. And it's a respect. So if they're really loud, we have to sit up maybe in our chair so we can speak that little bit better. Our voice box is clearer. And we're speaking with a little bit more energy, matching a little bit below where they are, the energy levels, but never, of course, the anger or the shouting. If I was face to face with someone, I would say you sit up in your chair and you lean forward to demonstrate you're interested in them. And it's about focusing on them, because there are lots of definitions for rapport. But the essential thing is people like to have something in common. They like common interests, common behaviors, common values, common beliefs. But if you can match and mirror to some level the tone, the pace, and the level to some extent, you are getting closer to them. And of course, to be acknowledging all the time. So, yep, okay, go on. As opposed to, now just tell me, what next? Just go on. Because there's a total mismatch there. Mm-hmm. So the rapport is matching where they are to wherever you can. Try to match something as much as you can to where they are. And of course, listen and show that acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Are you talking about neuro-linguistic programming, if it's a term that some of our listeners may be familiar with, when you talk about matching?
I am an NLP trainer, as it happens, but I think it's a standard thing. It's not even about NLP. It is about common sense. I've been running courses all year for government departments here, and I often bring this in, and I often ask people, well, what do you deal with someone who's angry on the phone, up shouting and upset? And sometimes people often say, well, I speak calmly. I just ask a simple question. You know, if you're married, what's it like when you are fuming and your partner is really calm? And you just effectively answer the question. It's a mismatch.
Yeah.
Now, it's not about shouting back, but it's about letting them know you're listening, demonstrating respect for where they are by suddenly upping your energy and acknowledging in a higher energy position. And although listeners probably can't see me, I always say if they're up high and you're really low, it's a mismatch. But if you can get up to be below where they are, south of where they are, and try to bring them down slowly, then you've got what's called pace and lead, and that's an NLP term. Equally, if they're really low, they're upset about something, you sometimes need to lower your energy to match where they are and bring them up. So it's just thinking what it'd be like in your own relationships at home and how you want to be listened to.
You know, that's fascinating because I can think about times that attorneys have called me, fortunately, not commonly, but they've been angry about an invoice, as an example. And I think my instinct has been to listen to them and not interrupt them.
Yep.
And to be calm and logical and reassuring. But maybe I wasn't displaying the appropriate amount of energy in that situation.
Yeah, it is about remaining calm, but at a higher energy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. You don't interrupt. But some verbal acknowledgements, you know, okay, yeah, I hear, yes. Those sort of acknowledgements just lets them know you're listening, mm-hmm. Especially if they're going on for a long time.
Yes. Often they are getting out as many words as their lung capacity will allow.
Yes. Yeah. And allow them to rant. That's fine. As long as you're interrupting those high energy levels. And when you get your chance, you're at that slightly higher energy until you can slowly bring them down.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm laughing because I was in a different context. I was in an ICU, or my next door neighbor was in an ICU, and the oncologist had just come in and told my neighbor that her husband had an incurable form of cancer and that he would be dead in a week and he should get his affairs in order. And okay. The ICU doctor was completely taken off guard because there had been no communication between the oncologist and the ICU doctor. And my neighbor, who was in a complete state of panic, handed the phone to the ICU doctor and said, talk to her. Well, the oncologist was a female. So he was ranting over the phone to me, thinking I was the oncologist. And he was spiraling around. If I'm drawing, for those of you who are watching the video, you can see my finger on Legal Nurse Business YouTube channel. But if you're listening, just imagine you're drawing a circle in the air horizontally. He kept spiraling around, and I couldn't interrupt him. And finally, I realized he doesn't know who I am, because he said, well, you're on the staff of this hospital. You know how to reach me. You could have called me. And I said, oh, excuse me, but I'm the next door neighbor. I'm not the doctor. And even though he caught himself, he still had so much a barrel of steam built up that he continued to spiral down. But he definitely came down in his tone. And by the end, he was beginning to laugh at himself because he realized who he was talking to and that he had just completely misunderstood. A few days later, I was in the hospital with her visiting her husband, and it turned out that he did not have an incurable form of cancer at all. He had a cancer that had gone into remission, and with appropriate treatment, he can live for years. So I saw this ICU doctor, he was making rounds, and he looked at me and he looked at the neighbor. He looked at my neighbor, the wife of this man, and I could see the brain click like, oh, that's the lady that I chewed out for 10 minutes before I figured out she wasn't the one I was angry with. He made no eye contact. He just kind of avoided me and just kept on moving.
Well, that's a story to remember.
Yes, yes. Know who you're talking about. Know who you are talking to when you are angry. Make sure you're directing your anger to the right target. As we talk about anger and we talk about rapport, let's focus on, if you could, on the difference between rapport and empathy, and how does that affect the way that you are interacting with that person who is angry and upset with you?
Okay, so rapport, really, most people, if anything, would confuse empathy with sympathy. But rapport is quite distinct in so much as it's about the connection and relating with people. So with rapport, you're just trying to find as much as you can to be in common, to find that you can get on with people. It is a relationship of a connection. So you're finding things that just happen to gel. It could well be that you're going off topic and talking about common interests or holidays you've both been on. Finding things where it's common. If you play golf and they play golf and I don't, but it's something to talk about. So they find suddenly it's relaxing and going into that. But the other aspect, as I said, is about matching to some level something about them. Usually rapport starts on common beliefs, understandings, if people have the same opinions, values, characteristics, they help to gel. That might take a little bit longer to find those, but if you can find them quicker, great. So rapport is at an unconscious level. And as I said, people like people who are like themselves. It is a form of connection at the unconscious level. And you can see, if you go in a restaurant or in the US it's a bar, I'd call it a pub here, you can see couples and you can look and think, are they actually in harmony or not? Because rapport is harmony. And looking at them and how they're sitting, how their drinks are placed, are they looking at each other when they speak? These are things that let you know whether there is a harmony and connection at that time. And it's quite interesting, people watching.
I'm sure you've seen people in restaurants who sit and stare at each other or not and don't exchange any words at all over the course of the meal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know that they're certainly not in rapport at that time. They may have had an argument. They may be in an unhappy relationship. It may be that they're in the same company but don't get on. It could be lots of things. But you can always tell. So rapport is about harmony and connection, and it is at an unconscious level. And an interesting way to look is if they've got two drinks on the table, and they say they're both drinking wine, if the glasses are put close together, it could be a sign that they are in rapport. If they're placed set a long way away, it could be a sign they're not in rapport. Mm. Not so easy to do if someone's having a big glass compared to a small glass, but it's just little signs. And of course, body language. You're watching their body language.
You know, I think that nurses who work with attorneys are, if they draw back on their clinical experiences, they recognize that when you are a nurse and you walk into a hospital room or a nursing home room, you have to connect with that person in the bed.
Yeah.
Within the first minute.
Yeah.
You have to establish rapport, whether that's through the way that you speak or the way that you touch the person's arm, for example. I can recall, you know, many people I talked to with and I touched their arm because that was a nice safe place as opposed to the shoulder or a leg. You've got to make that connection right away. And if you translate that same concept to establishing rapport with your clients right away, what I'm hearing you say, Steve, if I can interpret what you just said, is if you have that background of rapport, then when the attorney is angry about something that you've done, perhaps the attack is moderated a little bit or toned down because you are, that's Pat, whose husband is from India and has had a number of health issues. And, you know, she's a real person to me as opposed to just somebody I've talked to over the phone, and it's been purely transactional. Before we continue with the show, I'd like to share this special announcement with you. This is about how to manage toxic clients. If you suffer from not knowing how to manage toxic attorney clients, if you dread dealing with angry trial attorneys, then this message is for you. Here's why. When you know how to respond to criticisms, demands, to change your invoices, or unreasonable expectations, you'll be able to comfortably handle the confrontations that might occur. And you need to realize there's a cost to not dealing with this. Without knowing how to handle the situations created by toxic clients, you're anxious, worried, and you dread interactions with certain clients. If you ignore it, it just gets worse. What most LNCs do when facing situations created by toxic clients is attempt to placate them or avoid them. But for most people, none of that works. You might not realize you're attracting the clients you don't want to work with, so the clients keep stirring up trouble. You might not realize your billing practices invite confrontations. You sacrifice your money, your sleep, and your peace of mind. And then what happens if you just do nothing? If you just keep doing what you've been doing, you become disheartened. You question if this field is right for you. You think, I went into nursing to help people, not to be yelled at. You keep thinking, I've got to find a way to satisfy this client. It's stressful and upsetting to deal with them. They can undermine your confidence, drain your energy with negativity and complaints, waste your time, tarnish your reputation, and lose you money. This is how I learned to handle the toxic client. I've got an answer that works in managing the toxic attorney client. After a number of experiences with toxic clients, as an independent legal nurse consultant, I learned to see the red flag warnings before I got into a nasty situation. Using a 7-step process, I spotted the warning signs, recognized why the attorneys behaved as they did, and discovered how to deal with the toxic behavior. With a skillfully constructed call, I helped to clear the air and get to the root cause of the issue by clarifying expectations. I set boundaries. And I also examined what my company was doing to contribute to the attorney's reactions. And when necessary, I said goodbye to the client. It worked for me, and it will work for you. My system allowed me to feel in control instead of blindsided and helpless. When legal nurse consultants call me to share their own stories of toxic clients, I take them through the process I will reveal to you, and arm them with the tools to handle the difficult client. For example, Paula hit resistance when she asked her client to make sure she got paid for her deposition in advance. Her client became quite nasty. I gave her the exact wording she needed to handle the problem so she got her check. And Bill learned how to fire an extremely difficult attorney client while preserving his self-confidence. Do you have troublesome clients? Finally, it's your turn. When you get how to manage the toxic attorney client today, you'll get the keys to spotting the toxic client before trouble starts, confidently handle confrontations, recognize the 7 red flag signals that it's time to fire your troublesome client. It all comes as part of How to Manage the Toxic a Client course. Here's what you get. 4 detailed videos in which I take you step by step through the process so you know exactly what to do. Audios of the 4 videos if you prefer to listen. Word for word transcripts of the videos so that you can refer to them as a refresher. You get a worksheet for mastering toxic attorney clients with detailed steps and specific actions to take to implement the strategies for effectively dealing with toxic clients. You get 21 ideas blueprint on how to deal with toxic clients so you can effectively manage those clients you can't fire. And you get a checklist for evaluating your fee agreements to plug up holes, and a checklist for the steps in mastering toxic attorney clients. You also get a reference guide for recognizing toxic clients and great clients. If for some reason you're not delighted with the tips for spotting and managing toxic clients, then just let me know. You'll get all your money back. It's decision time. You have a choice to make. Do what you've been doing, or worse, do nothing at all. Or you know exactly where that will lead. Is that really where you want to go? Or take a new action to prepare yourself for a toxic client and get a new result. Finally, get the control you want in effectively preventing and managing a toxic client from creating havoc. What do you really want for yourself? Do you want peace of mind, or do you want turmoil? Here's what to do now. Click on the button to place your order. After filling in your payment information, you'll receive an email that will take you into the members area of Legal Nurse Business, where you can start accessing the course. I'll see you on the other side. Now let's return to the show.
That's absolutely right. And I always say that if you've got rapport with someone, even if you've only just recently met them or on that time, you can get away with a lot more. So it really gives you that emotional bank, or that bank account that gives you a little bit of leeway. Mm-hmm. And you need to do that as nurses do straight away. You need to aim to find what you can do that will just build that rapport. But you asked me about empathy.
Uh-huh.
Now, empathy is quite a different thing entirely. Empathy is when you're literally putting yourself in someone else's shoes, imagining how you would be responding or reacting, if it's whichever, if you were in their shoes in that same situation.
Mm-hmm.
It is not understanding, because we don't understand. And a lot of people make that mistake. And that's one of what I call the red rags, when someone says, I understand. But it's imagining, how would I be responding if I were in their position right now? And from that perspective, you're now communicating with them. It's what I call empathic listening, on the different levels that Stephen Covey talks about.
Are you advising the nurse not to say, I understand why you're angry?
I always advise never to say, I understand. Other than it, you can understand how to operate equipment, you can understand a technical problem, but we don't understand someone's emotions as they're going through at the moment, even if we've been through something similar, because we're all unique. Now, I have a lot of different phrases. I have what I'd call a number of red rag phrases, you know, triggers or phrases. Well, I call them red rags because they can, without warning, just set someone else off.
You mean like the red flag that you wave in front of the bull?
Yep. I understand is a red rag, and we don't know if it's going to be someone will get a reaction from that or not, but why take the chance?
Mm-hmm.
Starting a sentence with no, or you can't do that, immediately puts a block on the other person. So saying, why did you do that? That sounds like a challenge. You're challenging them. So if you're using why, you have to do it from a very curious, soft tone. You know, I'm curious. Why was it done that way then? I'm just puzzled. You soften it. But I try to avoid those. Saying but when you agree to something, I agree. Yeah, that's absolutely right. But but negates everything you just agreed with. And however, I always say is just a gentleman's but. So there are phrases that are definitely triggers or red rags, I still prefer to call them. And you need to find phrases to get round that.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the phrases I can suggest here is, I appreciate this is difficult for you. I appreciate what you're going through. Because they can't deny that you can appreciate. They can deny you understand. I can only imagine how challenging this is. Or I can't imagine just how challenging this is. Or I can hear in your voice, I can sense, I can see. These sort of phrases are neutral in so much as no one can deny that you're actually having them, that you can see or hear or sense. So these are ways that you can build empathy by using those empathic phrases as opposed to the red rags.
I can envision how this would bring a person's anger down, because you're saying to that individual, I see you, I hear you. You're in essence saying, I understand without using the words. You're
that's
saying,
right.
I'm recognizing that you are upset. And
yes.
That's what that angry individual wants to hear is, you're hearing me and you're going to fix this.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to pay this bill, or I don't want to have to go back to my client and say the expert witness cost $4,000 when I told the client it would only be two, or whatever is the issue at stake.
Yeah.
That acknowledgement.
Right.
Yeah.
And actually, I recognize is another good term. So, you know, I can see, I can hear, I can sense, I can tell, I recognize, I appreciate, I can only imagine. These sort of things are demonstrating that you really are appreciating where they are, and that they do have an issue. And you're putting it in a way that's non-confrontational, but they can accept that, okay, you're now listening and you can see their point of view. Because empathy is about imagining, you know, it is all about imagining what it's like if they were there and how you would be. And I use the word react versus respond. And I use that more with the behavior patterns, because when you react, it's an emotion. When you respond, it's thought out. And we want to respond, not react.
I know there's been a lot of focus, in particularly in healthcare communication, on the reactions of individuals under stress.
Yeah.
We've talked about empathy, and we've talked about rapport. And then the other piece of this is the aggressiveness, the passive aggressive, and the assertive responses. Could you differentiate for us between the aggressive, the passive aggressive, and the assertive?
And the passive as well, yes.
And the passive, yes.
I often do this with a triangle. So I imagine you have a triangle, and at the top of a triangle is assertiveness. On the left, say, is passive, and on the right is aggressive. And passive aggressive is somewhere in the middle. And then in the middle of that triangle, somewhere along it, you draw a horizontal line across. And I call that the line of emotion. And I believe when you drop into emotion, there is a level of aggression or passiveness. Aggression because you're getting angry, you're pushing your view, it must be so, you're attached to it. When you're passive, you're bottling in because you're not saying what you really want or agreeing to what you really want. So there's a level of emotion. When you're being assertive, you are simply being solution focused. You're not getting drawn into the stories. You're not getting involved, and you're staying not attached to whatever's going on. So with assertive people, You're looking for a win-win solution. You're looking to make sure everybody wins. The aggressor typically is looking for I win, you lose.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pushing their view. The aggressor could be shouting, angry, red-faced. They could be all sorts of signs. But to assert yourself is about strength, not about power. Whereas the passive person, again, they're just giving up. They're just want. Typically, I think an extreme passive person just wants to avoid confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I think of them. They'll avoid confrontation, so they'll keep quiet and do what they don't want to do because it's easier. The passive-aggressive person is both. The clue is in the words, passive and aggressive. They show their aggressiveness in a passive, underhand manner. So they could be backstabbing, manipulative, saying one thing in a room but something else outside, things like that, because they're trying to show their aggression, but they don't like to say it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I always say the passive aggressive person is a I lose, you lose. The passive person is I lose, you win.
Uh-huh.
So it's about being strong, standing your ground. Absolutely standing the ground, but being prepared to admit, you know what, I'm wrong, I'll listen to you. It's solution focused, non-emotional, in the moment, and that's what being assertive is.
And I think when we talk about difficult behavior, it's easy to focus on the angry person who is blasting the nurse about an invoice, the example we've been using. But the passive-aggressive one is a kind of a sneaky attack.
Yes.
How do you deal with somebody who might be acting in a passive-aggressive way?
That is the hardest one of all to deal with, because you don't always know where they're saying one thing to you but another behind your back. Now, if you're aware of them, then you can deal with them and you can say, well, I'd rather you spoke up, something like that. If you're unaware of them, it's very hard. All you can do is stay focused yourself and stay above that emotion line and put your stake in the ground. This is what I believe. What are your views? I'd say the hardest of all is to deal with is a passive aggressive. It's easy to deal with an aggressive person because you stand your ground. If you stand up, for instance, to a bully, the bully usually backs down. If you're talking to someone who's passive, your aim is to bring them out and to ask them to communicate. So you're trying to involve them. And let's not link this up with introverts, because that's different. A passive person isn't necessarily an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
But dealing with a passiveness, you're trying to bring them into the conversation. So you're including them. Whereas the aggressor, you're just standing up to them and making it clear, well, this is what we, this is where we want to go. What are your solutions? And if it doesn't work, you involve other people. Staying calm.
You know, what I think happens in a business situation with the passive attorneys, is that they might be unhappy with the services. They might be unhappy with the size of the invoice. And they pay the bill and they disappear and never return for more assistance. And or they tell their colleagues, don't work with Pat because her invoices are too high, or her experts are no good, or she didn't respond when I needed her to, or whatever is the complaint. And you may never have a clue that that unhappy person is out there saying those things about your business. Is there anything that we can do about that?
I think the only thing we can do is, same as with the passive person, actually involve them, ask them a bit more. Is this what you consider is right? Is this the right way? Or do you consider this fair? Just asking the question, so you're showing, because you want the win-win solution as the assertive person. And as you're absolutely right, the passive-aggressive person could be then going around and telling other people not to work with you. It's what they say behind your back, not what they say to you.
Mm-hmm.
So to involve them as much as possible at the time will typically show whether there's a level of dissatisfaction, and that's when you can try to deal with it.
Yes, and I think that's a great argument for being proactive, providing work to your client, and then actively seeking feedback. I don't know if in Britain people are as active as they are in the United States. You know, we go to a pharmacy to pick up a medication and we get an email survey. How was your service? What was your experience like? You know, sometimes it seems like it's even the tiniest interaction. They're asking for feedback. Why aren't we doing that with our attorney clients who have spent a lot more than we did in the drugstore on our business?
I do have one thing to say about some of these surveys that companies put out. In fact, one that I started doing today and I stopped halfway through because I'd spent 5 minutes and I was less than 10% through.
Oh, my.
So many companies are trying to put too much into the surveys. Keep it short and simple and people will respond. It's only on one page I think people might respond. When it goes beyond that, they don't want to keep going to next. And you put something in a multi-choice and then you ask to give some text. It's too much. So keep it simple and then use the surveys. But I'm finding a lot of companies are not doing it very well. They're just asking for too much information.
I think some of the best responses I've had to surveys is when I've sent them to Legal Nurse Consultants and the header is 2 questions, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I get people who will fill that out in much higher numbers than the system that you're describing, where you go, I'm sorry, I'm giving up. This is too much time.
I'll happily do, 8 to 10 questions, one page, without going to the next. If I can do it on the one page, see the questions, and that's it, I'll happily do it, because it'll be 2 minutes or less. So, yes, but I agree. Feedback or surveys, I think, are important. But in meetings or in other dealings with those like that, it is about asking them at the end, are you happy with this, or where's the valid effect? That's the only way you'll find out if they're really saying yes to your face and no outside.
I think what you've given us today, Steve, is a framework, especially the trigger words and the substitute phrases that will show that we're empathetic and we're establishing rapport, but we're not providing false promises. Like, I understand exactly how you feel. A phrase that it sounds like we should never be using, and instead to indicate that we are listening, we are hearing, and then we're ready to move into a problem solving mode of how can we make this situation better?
I think the final thing to remember is never be attached. I say it's being detached, but really what I mean is not being attached. So if you're attached to something, it means that it's your way or the highway, which is the aggressor attitude. When you're not attached to it, then it's about what's the best way, and you listen to all options. I'm not going to go into here, but I always say, think of an aggressor, think of anyone you know, or anyone in public figure who you think is an aggressor, someone who's really forcing their way. Then think of someone maybe who, quite the opposite, timid, doesn't want to argue ever, and think of a person who's always fair. Just imagine them and then get those characteristics in your mind to understand what it is. But there is another aspect which I bring in now sometimes. That's why I bring the B in, for behaviors. And because our behaviors, assertiveness is like a behavior, but so is emotional intelligence. I think of that, or transactional analysis, when we refer to the parent, the adult, and the child mode. And the parent mode and the child mode, again, I liken to being emotional to some level, or reactive. Whereas when you're in the adult mode, you're staying in the moment, solution focused, and it is purely responding, not reacting. So really it's about make sure your behavior responds and doesn't react to whatever the other person is doing.
You've given us great tips, Steve. How can our listener find out more about you and your services?
Well, I run workshops. I consult and coach on the customer service, and also on communication, particularly on speaking skills. My website is simple. It is my name, stevekatchick.com, and that is quite simply a cat and a chick put together. I'm easy to find on LinkedIn, and I'm happy to talk to anybody, especially if they're in either the retail or hospitality or technical areas I tend to focus on, who are looking to improve the response of their teams where they actually are customer focused. I always say I want to drive engagement, reduce churn or to retain customers and hence win more business. And that means developing the individuals as well as the managers.
I appreciate all of your expertise. You've shared some valuable information that will help us as we are dealing with those angry people in our lives. And although, at least for me, I would prefer not to deal with angry people ever, they have a way of sneaking in sometimes when you least expect them.
Yeah, no one wants to deal with angry people, but it's a fact of life we will do. And I'm not trying to position myself as someone who deals with conflict and conflict resolution, just some simple techniques where you can get on with people, because sometimes there's that person who we dread talking to. And again, I said at the beginning, is it them or is it us? Are we actually aggravating the situation? And other times, we just want to know how we can handle the situation, how we can calm it down or defuse it. And I think just using that, these simple techniques may not work every time, but it certainly goes a long way towards that.
Yes. Well, thank you for being a guest on Legal Nurse Podcast. I've enjoyed having you here. And if you didn't catch Steve's other podcast that we did earlier, be sure to check out him on the list of podcasts with whatever platform you're using. He shared tips on a different topic and again, conveyed that calm wisdom that helps us when we're dealing with difficult situations. I'll see you next week with a new show for Legal Nurse Podcast. This is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. You'll have a chance to meet Michelle Gaines, a nurse anesthesiologist, in this podcast that we just finished. We covered a couple of big topics, including ERAS and EMRs. Michelle, let's break those down for our viewer so they understand why this is a podcast they must listen to or watch.
Well, I want to let people know that things are changing in the world of anesthesia. And when you're reviewing the anesthesia record, it used to be gold standard, nothing to eat or drink after midnight. Now we're operating under ERAS, Enhanced Recovery After Surgery Protocols. And you're going to see people having clear liquids even up to 2 hours before surgery based on how healthy they are. And also people having major surgery, total hip, total knee repair, going home that very same day.
And that is a reality, folks, in case you have not heard of people being discharged the same day after a total joint replacement. The overview, the key points that we covered on ERAS, Michelle, what were the key things that we talked about related to that protocol?
What I'm seeing in the orthopedic population related to ERAS is teaching in the surgeon's office, starting there. The patient meets their physical therapist. They are told what exercises they'll be doing even before surgery. They're educated about pain control. They're educated about nutrition. They're educated about the importance of mobility. They're told that they can have liquids up until a few hours before surgery. They're encouraged to have a carbohydrate drink, and those are on the market now. There are clear liquid with a high sugar content. They are then, as soon as they come into the recovery area, within an hour, they're up and walking. They're met at home by the physical therapy and a home health nurse. And it's just a way for people to take control of their health and get better and get moving.
As a legal nurse consultant, you might be involved in screening a case for malpractice when somebody is injured as a result of some deviation from this protocol, either prior to surgery or after discharge. Michelle covers some key concepts that will help you in making that evaluation. And then the second part of our podcast that we covered was the interpretation of the EMR or the handwritten anesthesia record. A couple of key points from that, Michelle.
Well, Pat, I'll have to say people should look to the electronic medical record. They should question if anesthesia is using the same electronic medical record that the hospital system is using. If they're using paper and then converting it over, you may need to get an electronic medical record specialist involved, helping you decipher if all the information got imported in. Just letting people know that, especially if you get more rural or smaller facilities, not everybody's on the electronic medical record. Not every piece of equipment is slaving in information automatically.
Be sure to watch Michelle's podcast to find out what slaving in means and to get a new appreciation for some of the complexities associated with interpreting the anesthesia record. It's not a simple matter of being able to look at the flying geese, as Michelle and I were calling those little triangular marks that show up on an anesthesia record. She has more insights to share in her podcast, so be sure to get an opportunity to listen to Michelle Gaines as we talk about ERAS, the enhanced recovery after anesthesia, after surgery, and electronic medical records. Thanks so much. Be sure to catch Michelle Gaines' podcast. We talked about enhanced recovery after surgery protocols and EMRs. You'll get some great insights on both of those topics from a person who sits at the head of the bed delivering anesthesia. Look forward to having you on our podcast.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on LegalNurseBusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at LNCAcademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.